British Sky Broadcasting and Paramount Pictures presents Escape from Alcatraz, directed by Donald Siegel, starring Clint Eastwood, Patrick McGowan, Robert Splossom and Jack Threbo. Audio described by Therese Birch on behalf of MCS Agency. January 18, 1960, San Francisco at night. The Golden Gate Bridge spanning a vast stretch of water. Across the bay, a small island with brightly lit buildings rises out of the water. Alcatraz. It's pouring with rain. Next to the buildings on Alcatraz, a lighthouse. Two uniformed men, prison officers, wait in the rain. Two men in Max and Trilby's approach, holding onto their hats in the wind. Between them, a tall, handsome man, Frank Morris. His Trilby blows away in a gust. The three men walk in a line down wooden steps to the quayside and are met at the bottom by the prison officers, who escort Frank onto a boat. The two men in Trilby's return up the steps. The boat, called Warden Johnston, leaves the quayside. Frank holds onto the deck railings, flanked by the two prison officers. As the boat slowly turns, a US flag flutters on its stern over the name Alcatraz. Frank and the two officers are inside the boat in a cage. Frank glimpses the brightly lit prison buildings as they near the island. He stares out of the boat window as the wipers go back and forth. He goes through a wire hatch into the darkness below deck, followed by one of the officers who switches on a dim light. As he is looking around, grim-faced, a prison officer pushes him roughly and bundles him onto a seat. The officer puts cuffs on his ankles and attaches the other end to his own wrist. Frank gazes at the island through the barred window. A red light flashes as they dock by a sign, warning, persons procuring or concealing escape of prisoners are subject to prosecution and imprisonment. Frank observes the flashing lighthouse and the watchtower with searchlights through the rain-lashed window. The boat bumps into the jetty. A guard on the watchtower switches on a searchlight. Frank, on deck, squints in the rain and looks up at the dazzling light which is trained on him. The light follows him and the two officers as they disembark. They climb steps next to a wire fence in the torrential downpour. One officer climbs into the back of a van. Frank, attached to him by the manacles, follows. The second officer is behind him. Another guard shuts them in. The van drives off with a searchlight on it. It enters a tunnel. Frank sits inside in a cage opposite the two officers. The van turns and drives up a steep slope next to a very high wall. As the van pulls up by the prison entrance, a guard opens the rear door. Frank is helped out by one of the escorts and led up steps to the prison. Inside, in a control room, a guard presses a button to open the door. Frank and the two officers enter, passing a barred door, and walk down a narrow, dimly lit corridor. Frank is escorted into a reception room where another guard sits with a clipboard. His manacles are unlocked and his soaking mac pulled off. He bows his head, looking despondent, watched impassively by the reception officer.
All right, we gotta get back to the boat.
All right.
See you, man. See you, man.
The two escorts leave. The reception officer with the clipboard stands up.
Come through here.
Frank, eyes downcast, walks through a metal detector. A doctor in a white coat enters with another guard.
Strip down.
As Frank wearily removes his jacket and shirt, the doctor inspects his hair, going through it with his fingers. He takes a small torch from his pocket and shines it in Frank's ears.
Open up.
He looks in his mouth, then up his nose, and finally shines the torch in his eyes before replacing it in his pocket. The guard in the control room presses a button. Frank, naked, and two officers appear at the barred door. It opens. They walk through, past the control room. A second barred door opens. Frank glances at the warden in the control room, who stares back blankly. They pass through the second door. Lightning flashes through the ventilation grills in the roof of the cell block. Frank is escorted down the central corridor, painted with three yellow lines. Either side, three tiers of cells and walkways. Flanked by two guards, naked, Frank walks down the central yellow line, looking straight ahead. He ignores a prisoner watching from his cell as he pads along barefoot. One of the guards signals to another at the end of the corridor as they stop in front of a dark cell. The door slides open. Frank enters. The guard moves a large lever to shut the door.
Welcome to Alcatraz.
Lightning flashes as the guards leave. Sunrise over the Golden Gate Bridge. Alcatraz is silhouetted against an orange sky. Inside, two guards stand either side of the yellow lines. A third, by a desk, reaches up to sound the alarm.
Inside, BNC! Help!
Guards walk along the three levels either side in front of the cells. The guard by the desk picks up a clipboard. Either side on the ground floor, wardens operate the levers that open the cell doors. The inmates in blue uniform step outside and line up. The guard with a clipboard slides open the barred door behind him.
Move! Better make the collar, boy.
Frank fastens his top button, filing past a black prisoner. They march in line into the canteen, each picking up a metal tray as they approach the counter. Frank looks around shiftily as he queues for breakfast. He carries his tray of food to an empty table and sits on a bench. An elderly man in glasses sits opposite him. Frank picks up a spoon.
Danny.
The old man hurriedly spoons spaghetti into his mouth. Frank takes a mouthful of food and looks around. Guards watch the prisoners as they carry their trays to the tables. Another sits at a desk at the end of the canteen. Frank looks over his shoulder at another guard, holding a baton in a doorway behind a wire cage. The table fills up. Frank glances over at a fat prisoner on another table who smirks as he holds up a piece of spaghetti in his fingers and slowly sucks it into his mouth, staring at Frank. He grins lasciviously. Frank frowns, disgusted, and puts down his spoonful of food.
Fresh fish, you want your pasta? Hey, want your pasta?
Did you see any?
The old man's chin is spattered with food and saliva.
I see pasta in my sleep.
Frank drops his spoon on his tray and slides it over to the old man, who scoops the spaghetti onto his own tray, then pushes Frank's back. The old man takes a mouthful, then picks up a single strand of spaghetti and puts it under the table. Frank watches, frowning, and bends to look underneath. A mouse sits on the old man's knee, eating the spaghetti. He places another bit in front of him. Frank straightens up. The old man looks at him nervously. Frank nods with a bemused expression.
I'm a litmus.
He holds out his hand. Frank shakes it.
Like a litmus paper. When it gets so cold, my face gets blue. When it's hot, my face gets red.
Frank's eye is caught by the fat prisoner again, who is holding up a lighted match, staring at him fixedly. He lets the match burn down to his fingers. Frank looks away.
Inside, see. Move out.
The prisoners file out. Frank lies on his bed, his head by the bars at the front of the cell. He gets up as the door opens.
Ward wants to see you.
He steps out of his cell and walks down the central aisle in front of the elderly guard. The smartly dressed warden writes at his desk. The guard removes his cap as he ushers hesitant Frank into the large office. Frank stands before the warden's desk.
Name?
Morris.
This file says Frank Lee Morris.
Frank shuffles his feet, eyes downcast.
If you disobey the rules of society, they send you to prison. If you disobey the rules of the prison, they send you to us.
The warden looks up at Frank.
Alcatraz is not like any other prison in the United States. Here, every inmate is confined alone to an individual cell. Unlike my predecessors, Wardens Johnson and Blackwell, I don't have good conduct programs. I do not have inmate councils. Inmates here have no say in what they do. They do as they're told. You're not permitted to have newspapers or magazines carrying news. Knowledge of the outside world is what we tell you.
The warden fiddles with nail clippers.
From this day on, your world will be everything that happens in this building. You will shave once a day. You will shower twice a week. You will cut your hair once a month. Now, the privileges. You can talk. You can work. Other institutions hand out work, but here it's a privilege that you have to earn. I promise you it's a privilege that you'll want. Visitors, you're allowed 2 a month. They cannot be former inmates of this or any other federal prison. All names that you submit will be carefully checked by the FBI. What names do you have in mind?
I can't think of any offhand.
Family members?
None. No family.
Alcatraz is a maximum security prison with very few privileges. We don't make good citizens, but we make good prisoners. Burglary, armed robbery, grand larceny, You've escaped from quite a few prisons, haven't you?
He stands by Caged Bird.
That's why you're here. Alcatraz was built to keep all the rotten eggs in one basket. I was specially chosen to make sure that the stink from the basket does not escape. Since I've been warden, a few people have tried to escape. Most of them have been recaptured. Those that haven't have been killed or drowned in the bay. No one has ever escaped from Alcatraz.
He presses a button. Frank glances over his shoulder at the door.
And no one ever will.
Frank looks disdainfully at the warden, then turns and leaves, slowly passing a model of the prison on a table in the middle of the office. The warden picks up the nail clippers from the ashtray where he's dropped them. Under his hands on the desk, Frank's file. Possession of firearms, IQ superior. Frank lies on his bed, clipping his nails with nail clippers. He stands up, picks up a Bible, and hides the nail clippers in the back cover. He shuts the book and puts it down. He stoops to look in a small mirror that hangs from a shelf over the grimy wash basin. He turns on a tap. A guard patrols a caged gantry overlooking the communal showers. A group of naked men carrying towels enter. Frank is washing alongside Litmus, who is soaping the mouse, clasped in his fist.
Did you go everywhere together?
Sure, even to bed together. And when I wash, he washes. That way we sleep nice nights together. Gabish.
The fat prisoner arrives in the shower. A skinny, frightened inmate makes room for him. He stands close to Frank and tilts back his head, catching the water in his mouth, waggling his tongue. He spits, then smiles at Frank.
I'm Wolf. Where did they transfer you from?
Atlanta.
Nice town, Atlanta.
I never saw it.
Wolf looks him up and down, running his tongue over his teeth.
I'm looking for a new punk.
Frank glances at him.
Good luck. You don't understand. I just found it.
Frank gives him a sideways look. Wolf tilts his head, smiling. Frank turns towards him and grins.
You show her what you can do.
Frank puts his arm around Wolf's neck and punches him in the stomach repeatedly. Holding him up against the tiled wall, he grabs a bar of soap and shoves it in his mouth. He falls to his knees. Frank kicks his backside and as he collapses, mouths, son of a bitch. Wolf pulls the soap from his mouth as Frank resumes showering.
Morris, I need somebody in the library.
Yes, Captain. Move.
Frank is escorted away from the other prisoners through the central walkway by a guard. The guard opens a cage door into the library to let Frank in. The black prisoner is up a ladder by a tall bookcase.
What you want, boy?
Bull sent me down here to work.
Can you read, boy?
As long as it's in the English language, boy.
The black prisoner glances at Frank, who looks at him defiantly.
You treat them all like Wolf?
Wolf wanted to get friendly. I didn't.
You'll take that cart to the cells.
Don't they let cons down here?
You see any chairs?
How come?
Because this is the rock, man. They don't want you doing anything here. But time. Hard freaking time. Rock affects dudes differently. It either brings out your strength or it breaks you.
The black guy, now off the ladder, stares at Frank.
What'd it do for you? What happens when you get out?
I won't.
He limps back to the bookcase.
10 years ago. was in this bar in Alabama when two dudes started hassling me. That was their first mistake. They pulled knives. That was their second mistake. They didn't know how to use them. That was the last mistake they ever made. I got two 99-year sentences, back to back.
Seems like you could have pleaded self-defense.
The dudes were white, man. Just like you.
He hands Frank some books.
When I arrived here, they put me in one of those dark cells in D Block. After a while, I went stir crazy. Sliced my Achilles tendon to get out. You'll see why when you see D Block.
Tell me something. You're through killing white guys?
Why?
Oh, I don't know. I just figured maybe next time I wouldn't turn my back on you.
Frank pushes the book cart towards the door.
Hey. What's your name, man?
Frank. What's yours?
English.
See you later.
A guard holds the door open for Frank. English watches him leave. A guard peers at Frank through a slot in a metal door.
Her name?
Morris.
The guard opens the door for Frank and his cart.
Okay.
He pushes the book cart through past a desk and a flight of steps and stops by a black inmate's cell.
Magazine or book?
Where's English? What'd they do? Give a nigger of his own?
Frank pushes the cart onto the next cell where a man paces up and down.
Magazine?
Frank goes to the next cell.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm Bugsy.
Magazine or book?
Thanks. Hey, you're new.
Yeah.
Hey, wait a minute. I haven't seen a new guy in 6 months. It's nice to talk to people. How the Brooklyn Dodgers doing?
Moved to L.A. 2 years ago.
Oh? Kidding?
The guard blocks Frank's way.
Warden don't allow no books in these cells.
How come?
Because there's no light in them. Better deliver them books, Morris. Where they can be read.
Right.
Frank is in the exercise yard, which is surrounded by high walls topped with wire fencing. He watches two inmates shadow boxing, then strolls over to a prisoner who is skillfully painting a self-portrait. Frank looks over his shoulder at the canvas and notices he's painted a yellow flower on his shirt.
What's the flower?
That's something inside me. They can't lock up with their bars and walls.
He smiles and holds out his hand.
I'm Doc.
Frank shakes it.
You ever paint? No.
Why not?
Doc stops painting and turns to Frank.
You scared of dying?
Frank squints in the sunshine.
I don't think so.
You better be. You hurt Wolf. Wolf's gonna hurt you.
Doc watches Frank walk away. He approaches stone steps where a group of black inmates are seated. Frank starts to climb through them to reach English on the top step.
Where you going, Cracker?
8.
The prisoner looks up at English, who nods. Frank continues to climb and stands next to him.
Something special about those steps?
The higher you sit, the more status you got. So we kind of play king of the mountain. Except here we don't play for fun, man.
And you're king.
Yeah.
From the top step, there's a view over the walled San Francisco Bay. Frank turns to descend.
Now I figure there's two reasons why you didn't sit down on my step. Either you're too scared, or you just hate niggas. Now which is it, boy? You're too scared?
Frank returns to the top step and sits down next to English.
I just hate niggers.
Frank looks at English with a wry expression, then turns to gaze at the view of the bay over the wall.
one's ever busted out.
No one's ever made it. Everyone here has looked for a way out, but there ain't any. See those hacks? Those giants have one hack for every 7 cons. There's one hack for every 3 cons here. They start shitting at night instead of in the morning. They want to know why. Let's say you're gonna try it anyway. First, you've got to get out of the cell. Each bar has 6 hard, smaller bars set in a steel tube with extra steel poured in. And there ain't no way to tunnel out either. Shit. This island is solid rock. See that water?
A boat is passing.
It's over a mile swim to land. The curves make it seem like 10. The water's so cold, it will numb your arms in a matter of minutes. And even if you are a good swimmer, man, you won't have the time to make it. There are 12 counts every day. Sometimes I think that's all this shithole is. One long count. We count the hours, the bulls count us, and the king bulls count the counts.
Inside, everybody in.
English and Frank get to their feet. A guard passes Frank's cell. He's sitting on the bed.
I'm assigning you a permanent job. A carpentry shop. It's a paying job.
How much?
15 cents an hour.
Frank raises an eyebrow.
Well, I always knew crime would pay.
It's a job.
Frank looks up at the guard with a bemused expression.
See you later.
Frank walks with Litmus in the exercise yard.
I sleep lousy last night, but I sniffed the glue that helps pass the nights.
You afraid they'll shake down your cell?
Then I go to the hole. That's worth the chance.
I guess anything you want bad enough is worth the chance.
Including busting out?
Frank looks shocked.
Hey, maybe there's a way out. It's on top of your head. Yeah, the ventilator shafts on top of our block.
How the hell do you get on top of the block?
Yes, the bull for the key.
Thanks.
Wolf, looking murderous, barges his way through a group of inmates towards Frank, who's with the artist, Doc.
Summer's coming on. It's getting cooler. Weather here's as crazy as the rock. Maybe crazier.
Wolf strides purposefully across the yard, hands in his jacket pockets.
Mark Twain once wrote that the coldest winter he ever spent was a summer in San Francisco.
Doc spots Wolf taking something from his pocket.
Wolf's coming at you.
Is his handcuffed?
Yes.
Which one?
He's right.
Frank takes off his jacket, turns, and pushes it over Wolf's head as he raises a knife. He punches him in the face. Wolf swings the knife at Frank, who uses his jacket as a shield. Frank kicks Wolf in the groin, then strikes him on the head. Wolf comes at him again. A guard runs over. Wolf slashes him. A watchtower guard shoots at his feet. The inmates back away. Wolf throws down the knife. Two guards grab him by the arms. The wounded guard gets to his feet and, touching his neck, confronts Wolf.
You like D Block, Wolf? You better, because you're going to rot in there for a long time. D Block, Morris.
Frank looks stunned.
He came at me.
I said D Block.
He leads him away, gripping his arm. A guard unlocks and opens a solid metal door in D Block. Wolf and Frank, each flanked by guards, and march towards the cells. The D Block guard checks Wolf's jacket. His escorts remove it. Wolf turns back to Frank.
When I get out of here, you're dead.
Maybe dead before you get out.
Wolf is bundled into a cell. Frank is led forward. His jacket is taken from him. The guard pushes him into the dark cell with a baton in his back. He slides bars across, then shuts the door, leaving Frank in the pitch dark. Sunrise over San Francisco Bay. The sky is pink, lilac and gold. The sea is calm. Frank's cell door is opened, letting in some light. Sitting on the floor, he lifts his head and rubs his eyes. The guard points a hose through the bars. Frank watches nervously. The guard aims a jet of water at Frank, who crawls over to a corner, raising his arms to protect his head. He writhes under the powerful stream of water. The guard smirks through the bars.
Warden don't like inmates fighting.
Frank looks up at him.
Don't like them sticking up their cells either.
He shuts the door on Frank, who's lying on the floor in a pool of water. The sun sets behind the Golden Gate Bridge. The sky is deep orange, the sun reflected on the water. After ringing the bell, a guard stands at the end of the main cell block.
Lights out!
Section by section, the cell lights go out. The sun disappears over the bay. The sky glows orange with dark grey clouds. Frank's cell door is opened. He cowers in a corner, covering his face with his hands as the light streams in on him. He slowly looks round as a guard slides the bars open.
Going back to your cell.
He blinks and gradually gets to his feet, stumbling out of the darkness, shoulders hunched into the corridor. He shuffles off. The guard closes the cell door behind him. English looks out of his cell as Frank is escorted back to the main block. English stands up as Frank passes, barely looking around. Frank trudges wearily back to his cell. The guard slides the bars across. As he enters, Frank knocks his arm. He eases himself onto the bed as the cell is shut and slowly lies down. Litmus's pet mouse enters Frank's cell with a note on his back. Frank leans over and picks him up. He takes the note off him and places him back on the floor. He lies back on the bed and unfolds the note, which reads, "Welcome back, Litmus."
Welcome down, Petraeus.
Two guards stand by a cell as the door closes, then walk away. An inmate, Butts, puts on a clean vest.
Is anybody over there?
Yeah, me.
Come on up front, say hello.
Busy.
How busy can you be in one of these closets?
He shrugs as he hears Frank flush his toilet. As Butts puts on a pair of socks, Frank extends a hand through the bars. Butts looks reluctant to shake it.
Don't worry, I washed it.
Butts shakes Frank's hand.
How you doing, neighbor? I'm Charlie Butts.
Frank sits on his bed.
Smallest cell I ever been in.
You'll get used to it.
I don't think so. I don't like living alone in one of these cells.
You'll get used to that, too.
The cell doors slide open. Frank and Butts step outside. As he buttons his shirt and trousers, Butts nods to Frank.
Your time!
Butts looks around as he hurriedly tucks in his shirt.
Button the collar.
Butts buttons his collar, nodding thanks.
Who's the new fish?
Got a man next to me.
What's your name, kid?
Charlie Butts.
Charlie's butt?
Butts. Butts. Charlie Butts.
You got a funny friggin' name, kid.
Yeah. What's your name?
Al Capone.
Frank looks at Litmus.
I thought you was dead.
Me dead? I got too much money. I'll never die. Say, you play poker?
Not much.
I just learned myself. We'll play tomorrow. See you later, kid.
See you later, Al.
Frank puts down the weights he's been lifting.
I don't believe I just met Al Capone.
I don't either. I'm Doc.
Charlie Butts.
How's the painting going, Doc?
You mean the one of the warden? It's nearly finished. Painting the warden? Very inspiring.
The warden, in a well-cut suit, walks past the cells of the middle tier, swinging his nail clippers in his hand. He loses his grip and they fly through the bars into a cell. He signals a guard to open the door, with Dalton's name on it. The warden enters Doc's cell, which is full of paintings. He stoops to pick up his nail clippers and looks at a picture on an easel. He takes it off the easel and holds it up. The painting is of a bird flying through bars. He replaces it and turns to leave, his eyes caught by the back of a canvas propped up against the wall. He picks it up from behind a case and turns it round to look at it. He pulls on the light switch. He smiles smugly as he looks at a perfect likeness of himself with bright blue, mad-looking eyes.
Inside! Everybody in!
The prisoners leave the yard. The deputy warden enters the warden's office.
Yes, sir?
I want painting privileges taken away from Chester Dalton.
Doc?
Cell 233.
What's the reason?
You're the deputy warden. You think of what?
When do you want the suspension to begin?
It's not a suspension. It's an elimination.
The warden returns to his desk after feeding the fish.
Right away.
Yes.
Doc is working on his bird painting when a guard enters his cell.
Painting privileges have been removed.
The guard removes pictures from the wall and takes Doc's palette from him.
Why? I don't know.
He packs the easel in a case and shuts the lid, then picks up the warden's painting from behind it, glancing at it. Doc looks down. The guard grabs the bird picture and easel and carries them out of the cell.
Painting's all I have.
I'm sorry, Doc.
The guard leaves. The door slides shut. Doc purses his lips, bereft. His chin quivers. A guard on a watchtower practices firing at a target. Butts flinches as he walks down a flight of steps with Frank and Doc. An armed guard patrols a caged gantry above the empty woodworking shop. On the floor, another checks his watch. The inmates file in. Doc's head is bowed.
You okay, Doc?
I think there's something wrong with it.
As Frank watches Doc with a concerned expression, the inmates file into the workshop past him. Doc pauses by a pair of overalls on a hook and looks at the wire-covered window above it. He takes down the overalls, watched by Frank, who's standing near a guard at the door. Looking troubled, Doc puts on the overalls. Furtively, he takes something out of his pocket and drops it into the pocket of another pair of overalls hanging up. Frank approaches the guard.
Now, if I was you, I'd keep my eye on Doc. He seems pretty upset.
Cons are always upset about something. Put your overalls on.
Doc stands by a workbench.
Mr. Zimmerman, I'm making a new table. I need a hatchet.
The guard checks the bench, then goes to a cage storeroom with Doc.
Bob, get Doc a hatchet.
The chopper is passed through a hatch to the guard, who hands it to Doc. Doc touches the blade as the guard walks away. Blinking rapidly, he returns to his workbench, his jaw clenched. The guard saunters back to Doc and stands by the workbench, hands on hips. Staring at the guard, Doc grips the hatchet with his left hand and raises it. He brings it down on the fingers of his right hand, chopping them off. Doc waves the blood-stained hatchet at the guard, who falls backwards. Litmus crosses himself.
Get him out of here! Get him out!
Butts covers his mouth, about to vomit. As the guards bundle Doc out of the workshop, Frank runs after him.
Get back to work!
Litmus pats Frank on the back as he looks down at the drops of blood on the floor.
Let's go! Move!
Frank backs away.
Everybody, back to work! Let's go!
Frank returns to his bench, putting his hands in his pockets. He pulls out the yellow flower that Doc had put in. He looks around, then replaces it in his pocket. He walks past the storeroom to Doc's bench and stares at the bloody hatchet. He picks it up and, with a murderous expression, brings it crashing down, slicing into the bench. The guards and inmates stare at him as he empties a box of screws on the floor and gently picks up Doc's fingers and places them in the box, wiping his own finger on the edge. Looking furious, he carries the box over to a guard and shoves it at him.
Here, put that in your report.
He storms off. The guard looks down at the box and gulps. Frank sits in his cell with a flower in his hand. He puts it down on a backgammon board, picks up a counter, and throws it at a tin in front of a grill set in the wall under the sink. He misses. He tries another and misses. He picks up a third and, with a half-hearted flick of his wrist, tosses it into the tin. He frowns as he notices a cockroach crawl out of the tin. He leans forward and watches it disappear through the grill. He crouches down next to the toilet and places his hand on the grill. English wheels the book cart past his cell. Frank jumps up.
What are you doing back there, boy?
Frank glances over his shoulder.
How about a magazine?
Why not?
What do you want? A boy's life? I know some queens who fight over it every month.
Just give me what you got on top there.
Smiling, English passes a bundle of magazines through the bars.
I heard about Doc. And I know why he did it.
Frank frowns at English.
Somebody took away his painting privileges.
Who?
The warden.
English leaves. Frank's lips twitch with anger. Frank leaves the counter in the canteen with his tray.
Morris?
He stops and walks over to the warden.
Sir? I hear there was a slight accident in one of the shops.
Accident? Oh, you mean Doc?
Yeah, it seems someone didn't like what he was painting, so someone won't let him paint anymore.
Someone should warn Doc to be careful about what he paints.
You're absolutely right, sir. There's always the possibility that some asshole will be offended. Isn't there?
We all have to be careful. Back in line.
The warden looks uncomfortable. Frank walks back towards the tables, pausing to look over at English, who nods imperceptibly. Frank approaches his own table.
Hey, how's it going, Frank?
Well, in the Anglets. What are you guys doing? Just dropping by?
Yeah, I thought we'd pay you a visit.
Gotta stay long?
Not long. Only about 15 or 20 years.
Why the rock?
We were going over the wall at Atlanta when we encountered a minor problem.
So she had.
They saw us.
Yeah, that do present a problem.
Well, the ship is to Leavenworth.
Yeah, but we didn't like the accommodations there either. Warden said he knew just the place for us. Alcatraz.
Is it true no one's ever bust out of here?
So they tell me. Jesus. Wonder what I'd be like after 15 years here.
Frank lies on his bed reading the Bible. A guard passes. Frank sits up and takes the nail clippers out of the cover. He stands up. Checking no one is looking, he switches off his light with the pull cord, then crouches in front of the grill, hidden by a toilet roll and the tin. He removes the toilet roll and glances over his shoulder, then moves the tin to one side. Leaning on his elbows, he grimaces as he pulls at the grill with the nail clippers. It doesn't budge. He looks at the wall framing the grill and starts chipping at it. Small chunks fall off. He looks up at the sink over his head, stands and puts on the light, returning to his bed, pretending to read the Bible before the guard returns.
You still reading that Bible?
Oh, yeah. It's opening up all kinds of new doors.
The guard leaves. Frank, still on his bed, drops the nail clippers into the spine of the Bible, closes it and glances behind him through the bars. Frank sits outside on a step next to Butts.
I turned 35 today. Some birthday.
Come on, man.
When's your birthday?
I don't know.
Geez, what kind of child did you have?
Short.
They gaze across the wall at the skyline of San Francisco.
Always wanted to see San Francisco. Never thought it'd be like this.
What'd you get sent to the Rock for?
Butts shrugs.
A couple of years ago, I started stealing cars. For kicks, mostly. Sometimes I'd strip and sell the parts. Got sent to the state pen.
Did you end up in Alcatraz for that?
Not exactly. There was a bull there. I liked to push me around. So when I got out, I went back and I stole his car. Unfortunately, I drove it across the state line, which made it a federal rap, and a bull saw to it that I was sent to the Rock.
He shakes his head and sighs.
English. Visitor for you. Butts, you got a visitor.
Me?
Yeah, you.
Probably somebody who wants their car back.
Butts shakes his head and stands up. The visitor's room. A guard sits at a desk in the corner wearing headphones. Two women, one black, one white, sit at windows in a partition holding telephones. English sits opposite the black girl and picks up the phone on his side of the partition. They look at each other with anguished expressions.
Hello, Father.
English slowly takes the phone away from his ear.
Why didn't you tell me you were coming?
I was afraid you wouldn't let me.
It's just hard to see you like this.
Butt's wife looks upset.
Your mom is going to die.
Butts blinks back tears and covers his eyes with his hand. Tears roll down his wife's face as she watches him.
Charlie.
When?
Well, she's got a few months. Can you call her?
We're not allowed to make phone calls from here.
You are not allowed to discuss the rules of the institution. Stick to your personal life.
Personal life. You get that kick out of it? Hello? Hello!
I love you, Charlie.
Their phone cut off, she touches the glass between them with her fingers. He places his fingers against hers on the other side. He paces his tiny cell, banging his forehead with his fist, then kneels on his bed close to the bars.
Hey, Frank?
Yeah?
If you ever try to get out of here, I want in.
Frank looks thoughtful, then continues reading, lying on his bed. An armed guard observes the canteen from a caged gantry.
Must be Wednesday.
Why?
Mystery mounds. We always have mystery mounds on Wednesday.
I can't taste it. I just need a habit.
What's the movie this weekend?
Some cowboy piece of shit.
At least they could show us a gangster movie.
I may have found a way out of here.
Shocked, Butts and John and Clarence stop eating. Frank glares at a one-eyed prisoner who's eavesdropping.
You looking at something?
He looks away.
The way I figure it, the cell block's really getting old. The moist air is corroding the concrete. Salt is rusting the metal. I took a nail clipper. I was digging around the grill in the back of the cell. I think with some work I could dig that grill out of there, enlarge the hole, and get into the utility corridor, which leads to the top of the cell block, and maybe out on the roof.
How will we hide the hole while we're working on it?
Well, we can tear the ads out of magazines. No one will miss those, and make cardboard out of them. Paint grills on that and put it back in the hole. Maybe partially obscure it with a towel or bathrobe or whatever. I've ordered an accordion, which I'm going to put in front of my hole.
Suppose we make it out of the cell house. They'll know we're going at the next count.
We'll leave at night. That way they won't know till the morning. We're going to have to make some dummy heads, make them out of plaster, cardboard, or whatever. Put them in the bunks, and the guards won't know. You work in the barbershop, you get all the hair in here.
How we get across the bay?
That's where you come in, John, because you work in the clothing shop. We're gonna steal some raincoats, some contact cement. We'll make a life raft and some life preservers out of it. I read how to do it in Popular Mechanics. They're gonna think we'll go to Frisco. Well, we won't. We'll go to Angel Island instead.
Butts looks worried.
What about me? You'll stand guard while I dig. I'll stand guard while you dig. You two trade off the same way.
What are our chances?
Slim. I'm in.
Me too.
I want to go.
Frank nods. Frank takes the nail clippers out of his Bible, checks no one's looking, and leans against the bars.
Charlie.
Start digging, so keep an eye out for the bulls. You see one coming, you start whistling, huh?
Frank turns off the light. Butts fetches a mirror and holds it out through the bars. Frank puts his jacket on the floor beneath the grill and removes the toilet roll and tin from in front of it. He glances over his shoulder, then starts chipping away around the grill with the nail clippers. Lying on his back, he continues to chip away at the concrete. Alerted by the noise, he sits up and looks over at an inmate in the cell opposite who's dropped a book. Frank resumes, beads of sweat on his face. He looks at his dust-covered hands and flexes his stiff fingers, lying on his back by the grill. He's eating in the canteen. A guard walks past their table.
We renamed this place the Rock, wasn't kidding. Working with those nail clippers just doesn't have any grip.
Frank looks at the spoon he's holding as if he's had an idea. Checking the guards aren't watching, he reaches down under the table and rubs the spoon on the heel of his shoe.
Hey, guard.
The guard approaches the table.
Yeah? Any chance of exchanging the spoon? Looks like it's been sticking in someone's ass. And I want to ask about working in the kitchen.
The guard nods his head.
Go ahead, thank you.
They both get up from the table and go over to the guard who's seated at a desk at the end of the canteen with the cutlery boxes in front of him.
Hey, I'd like to find out about joining the kitchen detail.
Can you cook?
The spoon's a little edgy. Can I turn it in for that?
You're goddamn right I can cook. Hey, I used to be a short order cook in a cafe down in Georgia. Everybody loved my meatballs.
Yeah, what happened? Quit or get fired?
Neither. I robbed the cafe.
Frank has picked up two spoons. He secretes one in his pocket as he returns to the table. Frank sits on his bed with his accordion. English arrives with a book cart.
Heard you had a visitor.
My daughter. She's getting married. He's white. Just like you.
Congratulations.
Mm-hmm. My magazine?
Yeah. What do you recommend?
Oh. Ebony.
English sticks it through the bars. Frank grabs it.
English. Is it possible to weld two pieces of metal together here in the cell?
For digging or sticking?
Digging.
It ain't easy, but I could show you. Planning on going somewhere.
Frank looks down at the magazine.
There hasn't been a day that I've been on this rock that I didn't think of busting out. If I'd known when I sliced my tendon, I'd have sliced my throat instead.
English leaves. Frank and Litmus are in line in the canteen.
Hey, Litmus. Huh? Can you get me a dime?
No problem. Cost you 10 desserts.
I need it tonight.
No problem. Cost you extra 5.
If you give me a dime, I'll toss in 10 beetles for your mouse.
Litmus, in his cell, checks the guards are not looking, then passes a dime through the bars to the man in the next cell. He, in turn, passes it to the next inmate. Frank stands a bundle of matches held together with a rubber band in his tin. On the wall is Doc's self-portrait. The inmate passes on the dime to his neighbour, who drops it. A hand reaches out and picks it up. Frank looks up, puts down the spoon he's holding, and goes to the bars to collect the dime. Frank puts the dime down next to the tin on a little table. Sitting on the edge of the bed, he picks up the spoon and bends it till the handle breaks off. He puts the two pieces down. He picks up the nail clippers and pulls them apart. He takes the dime and rubs it on a part of the clippers to shave off some metal. He purses his lips in concentration. He brushes his hands together, then picking up the spoon handle, slides part of the clippers onto the end. He picks up the dime shavings and drops them onto the join. He looks over his shoulder at the bars, then reaches up to the pull switch and turns off the light. He picks up a match and strikes it on the floor. He ignites the bundle of matches in the tin and blows out the match. He holds the spoon handle over the flame to heat up the join. He frowns as the handle becomes hot.
Hey, Frank, what's burning?
Shh. If you see one of those bulls coming, you just start whistling.
He puts the handle down on the table and rubs his hands. He blows out the matches in the tin, then picks up the blackened handle, now attached to the clipper part. He blows on it, then picks up the tin and places it on a shelf over the sink. He moves the accordion case away from the grill and puts his jacket on the floor in front of it. The concrete surround has been partly chipped away. Frank lies down, leaning on one elbow, and starts hacking at it with his new tool. Next door, Butts, on lookout duty, yawns and struggles to keep his eyes open. A guard appears around the corner and starts walking past the cells. Oblivious, Frank continues to chip away at the wall.
Hey, Spoof, what's for breakfast?
The guard ignores English. Butts suddenly realizes the guard is coming and tries to whistle, but is unable to make a sound. Frank, unaware, carries on scraping. Butts grabs a mug and taps it on the bars. Frank looks over his shoulder and gets up, hurriedly replacing the accordion case in front of the grill. He shakes the dust and chippings off his jacket over the toilet, shoves it under his bed and lies down just as the guard approaches.
Something burning.
I don't smell anything.
The hell must be my imagination. Working nights really gets to you after a while.
Frank suddenly notices the tool on the floor.
Yeah, we ought to try it from my side.
The guard smiles and leaves. Frank exhales, relieved. He stretches out and picks up the tool, sitting on the edge of his bed. He leans towards the bars.
Keep an eye out, he may be back.
Frank grabs his jacket from under the bed, moves the case away from the wall, and arranges his jacket on the floor beneath the grill. He lies down and resumes hacking at the concrete surrounding the grill, eventually breaking into a sweat, grimacing with the effort. Frank has hacked away enough concrete to free up one side of the grill. He tugs at it, but cannot shift it. He is outside, walking behind Butts, filing past a flower bed.
Think the grill's welded on two hook anchors?
I think so. If I can get a wedge out of the carpenter shop, I may be able to knock those anchors loose.
He releases dust and debris from his jacket pocket as he walks along. The woodwork shop. Frank picks up a small wooden wedge covered in metal and shows it to Butts.
This might just be what I'm looking for.
Yeah, but it won't get through the metal detector.
Yeah, I know.
They are marched through a metal detector. Frank, who has triggered the alarm, holds up the wedge.
Come on, hold it.
I made it for a clothes peg.
Why the metal over the edge?
So the clothes would slide off easy.
I don't believe you.
Look, I didn't try to hide it. Why would I try to take metal through a metal detector?
Because you're stupid. Move it.
The guard retains the wedge. Frank leaves. In his cell, he slides the heel of his shoe sideways to reveal another wedge. He takes it out and turns off the light. He removes the accordion case from the wall. He places the wedge at the side of the grill. He sits on the floor and, bracing himself by gripping the corner of the bed, kicks the grill with his left foot. Butts is looking in the mirror through the bars. Frank kneels and pulls the wire mesh out of the hole. Leaning on his elbows, he sticks his head through the hole. He observes the metal framework of the ventilation shaft. He pulls his head back through. Butts is using the tool to chip away at the wall in his cell. Frank keeps lookout by holding the mirror through the bars. The guard is walking away, hands behind his back. He pulls in the mirror and turns it the other way to observe the guard seated at a desk at the other end of the cell block. While Butts continues chipping away at his wall, Frank sits on the end of his bed, soaking bits of screwed magazine pages in the sink and moulding them on a towel draped over the toilet. Butts works away at his grill. Frank is creating a box. John Anglin hacks at his wall. In the neighbouring cell, his brother Clarence sits up suddenly to check on the guard. He looks out of the bars both ways. John continues. Frank reaches behind the accordion case and grabs some grey concrete dust from the hole. He drops it in the sink. He takes out some papier-mâché and moulds it into a strip. John picks up his jacket from the floor and hangs it up. He arranges a towel on a washing line so that it covers the hole. Frank is still making shapes out of papier-mâché. John is moulding a lump of wet paper in his cell. Clarence looks over his shoulder, crouching in front of his grill, then starts hacking at it. A guard approaches Butt's cell.
Open up 107.
The bars slide open.
What'd you order this stuff for? You don't look like the painting type to me.
You were no talent ever looked you in the face.
Well, I'm looking you in the face, and I don't see jack shit.
As he leaves, signalling for the cell to be shut, Butts smiles and clenches his fists. Clarence passes a handful of hair to Frank as they file along outside.
Hair, your colour.
Frank.
Butts passes paint and brushes through the bars.
Paint. One of them's flesh colour.
What are you painting?
I don't know. The ocean, maybe.
If you're using flesh-colored paint, you better damn well paint a portrait. Yeah.
Frank crouches in the dark at the back of his cell and fits the papier-mâché false section of wall and grill over the hole. He then sits on the end of his bed and assembles the rest of the papier-mâché sections together to form a head. He paints the false grill grey to match the wall. He takes the head he has created out of the hole and places it on the end of his bed. He puts the fake cover over the hole. He paints the head pink and attaches a bit of hair for eyebrows, dabbing them in place with a finger. He holds up the mirror and looks at his reflection, then compares it with the head he's created, complete with closed eyes, lashes, and hair. In his dark cell, he puts the head on the pillow and pulls up the bedclothes to half cover it. He moves the case away from the wall and lifts out the false grill. He lies on the floor and turns on his back, head through the hole. He heaves himself through. He reaches back into his cell, grabs the fake section and slides it into place. He walks through the narrow ventilation shaft. He grips a pipe and, looking up, climbs through metal struts. A guard patrols in the cell block. Butts, painting, jumps up and sticks his mirror through the bars, then taps a warning with the brush. He resumes painting. The guard approaches, thumbs hooked into his belt, checking the cells. Butts looks up anxiously as he paints. The guard pauses outside Frank's dark cell, sees the head on the pillow and moves on. Frank climbs up metal rungs to the roof space. He pulls himself up on a pipe and freezes. Close by, a guard is walking past on the other side of a wall of bars. Frank looks behind to check he's gone, then heaves himself up onto the pipe and walks along next to the bars, crouching in the semi-darkness. He looks up at a hatch in the roof with bars across it. He tries jumping but cannot reach it. Butts stops painting and looks out of the bars. A guard is checking the cells. Butts leans close to the wall between his cell and Frank's. As the footsteps near, Butts hurriedly returns to his easel. The guard passes Frank's dark cell and stops outside Butts.
Morris go to sleep early tonight?
Yeah. Wasn't feeling well.
He must sleep pretty soundly. He hasn't moved.
He drops his baton, and as he stoops to pick it up, he glances at Frank's head on the pillow next to the bars. He squints, studying the head. Butts is wide-eyed with anxiety. The guard slowly stands up and reaches through the bars to touch the head.
Morris?
Yeah, what's up?
The prisoners are at breakfast.
I went up on top last night. Saw the ventilator shaft in the roof. Can't reach it. I'm gonna need a boost. How you all coming? My dummy's ready.
The hole's done. We're just starting the dummy.
They ain't doing too good.
Frank glances at Butts.
Tonight, John and I'll go up.
Frank watches a guard pass their table.
You start getting those raincoats from the clothing shop, you might as well start hauling them up.
Yeah, I'll wear one back in the shop each day. There's a different hack at the cell house door in the afternoon. You'll think I wore it to work.
Can you get that contact cement?
I keep inventory.
Frank and John climb up through the dark ventilation shaft.
Frank.
John carries raincoat material on his back. They reach the level of the barred corridor and tiptoe past. John kneels and removes the bundle of material from his back and lays it out on the floor. Frank looks up at the barred hatch. John creeps over to Frank. John gives Frank a leg up to the hatch. He grabs the bars.
The bars feel pretty solid. Seems to be a metal hood. Riveted onto iron uprights. Can spread the bars with a pipe and knock the hood off.
Frank drops down.
It's an electrical outlet here. We'd just get a motor and a drill bit and a flashlight, we'd have it all.
Great. Where's the nearest hardware store?
Band practice.
I got those deep blocks. I've got the
Frank, sitting with his accordion, spots a fan on top of an electric organ and frowns. He leans over to Litmus next to him.
Can you get me an extension cord and a drill bit out of the shop?
They find out I go to the hole. All right. But from now on, you put your desserts on my tray.
Time's up. Back to the cells.
Damn it. This one I thought was doing good.
The inmates pack up their instruments. Frank grabs the fan and puts it in his accordion case.
I can use this. Are you crazy?
Butts and Frank pick up their accordion cases and file out with the other prisoners. They pass through a caged tunnel. Two guards wait at the exit. Butts looks around nervously.
Hold it, Morris.
Frank stops.
Want to take a look at one of those cases?
Frank raises an eyebrow defiantly. Butts looks down.
Try this one.
Frank holds up his case. Butts looks shifty.
Butts, open it up.
Frank leaves. Butts opens his case.
I stole his penknife from the dock.
Frank sits in the ventilation shaft, taking the fan to bits. John shines the torch and climbs up the pipework with the raincoat material on his back. Frank frowns in concentration. John grips a pipe to see if he can loosen it as Frank gets on with the fan. John knocks the pipe as he detaches it. Frank glances up nervously. Frank looks over his shoulder. John continues to climb up the shaft, holding the pipe in one hand and the torch in the other. Frank creeps along with a fan. John places the pipe on a ledge above him. Frank climbs up behind him. A guard patrols the corridor, looking in the cells. Frank bends down to pick up the fan and some flex. John kneels over the raincoat fabric on the floor. Frank freezes. John ducks as the guard patrols below them. Frank stands up. John joins Frank and gives him a leg up to reach the hatch. Frank hangs from the bars, then swings his legs and feet through to anchor him in position.
Thank you.
John hands him the pipe. Frank uses the pipe to bend the bars apart. He hands the pipe back and hauls himself through the small gap. John looks up anxiously. John drops the pipe. A warden on the ground floor looks up. Frank reaches back through the bars. John hands him the fan and tosses up the flex. The guard continues to look up, then climbs a metal staircase at the end of the row of cells. Frank switches on the pen light and uses the fan fitted with a drill bit to drill a rivet on the hatch, creating a shower of sparks. The guard reaches the next tier. John looks up at the hatch. The guard patrols the cells. Frank, holding the pen light in his mouth, continues to drill the rivet. The guard leans back on the walkway railings and looks up at the roof, then returns towards the steps. The inmates are watching a war film. Clarence sits next to Butts.
Fire! Hey, 50mm guns.
Butts turns to Frank.
I'm worried about the shakedowns. My cardboard grill keeps slipping out.
Put some contact cement around the edges, that should take care of it.
Frank slowly turns to John on his other side.
How's the rafts and the life jackets coming?
Okay. I think they'll be done Tuesday.
Frank nods.
Tuesday night we go.
The warden walks past the tables in the canteen. He pauses and looks over at Frank's table. Frank places a yellow flower in a mug and pours water from a jug into it.
What's that for?
Just thinking about Doc.
Yeah. We planted those chrysanthemums 15 years ago. They meant a lot to Doc. And to me, too.
I had a garden once.
What'd you grow? Weeds?
It's against regulations, Morris. You know it.
The warden picks up the flower and crushes it in his fist. Furious, Litmus leaps up, then collapses on the floor at the warden's feet. Frank rolls him over.
Stretcher!
You won't need one.
Frank takes off his glasses and puts them in his pocket. His pet mouse scuttles under his legs. The guards lift him onto a stretcher.
Some men are destined never to leave Alcatraz.
John, Clarence and Butts exchange looks.
Alive.
Frank, kneeling, glares at the warden, who throws the pieces of flour on the floor and strides away. English pushes the book cart to Frank's cell. He's doing sit-ups on the floor. He stands up.
Got those books that may help you.
Thanks.
See you later, man.
Goodbye.
The two men stare at each other through the bars. Frank extends his hand. English smiles. They shake hands.
So long, boy.
Frank smiles as English leaves, pushing the book cart. Frank lies on his bed reading a magazine. The warden approaches. The door slides open, a guard enters.
Shake down.
He taps the bed with a hammer.
Move.
He throws back the bedclothes and taps the bed again. He carries the mattress and bedding out of the cell. The warden enters. Frank sits on the bed. The guard runs a metal detector over the bedding. The warden sits on the table opposite Frank and looks around. He moves the accordion case away from the wall, watched by an apprehensive Frank. The warden glances at him, then opens the case, covering the fake grill with its lid. He runs his fingers over the accordion.
You been playing this thing long?
A couple of months.
You any good?
Terrible.
You'll get better.
He closes the lid, exposing the grill. Frank moistens his lips. The guard returns with the bedding. The warden stands up and walks out. The bars slide shut.
That's one of the benefits of Alcatraz. Lots of time to practice.
The warden leaves with the guard.
Has Morris been doing anything unusual recently?
Sometimes he stays up late talking with the butts.
Split them up. Move Morris.
Yes, sir. I'll have to get a cell ready and do the paperwork.
Do you?
Yes, sir. We can move him, say, Wednesday.
Tuesday morning.
Yes, sir.
The inmates are filing in two lines into the canteen. Wolf breaks away and stands over Frank, who's already seated at a table.
I missed you, Morris. I missed you so much I got a present for you.
Get your ass back there.
A guard bundles him away. Everyone at the table turns and watches.
He'll kill you. And you'll have to kill him. You know, I'm not going to give him the chance. Can you get the raft and the life jackets ready to go by tonight?
John nods.
All right. We'll all meet on top as soon as lights are out.
The inmates descend caged steps down to the exercise yard. Two guards stand either side at the bottom of the stairs as the prisoners pass between them wearing their jackets.
Wolf, you carrying?
Who, me?
Wolf holds out his arms while the guard frisks him.
Move out.
Wolf walks away stiffly. He lumbers towards Frank, who, unaware, is putting on a woolly hat. Wolf limps closer, looking determined. Frank looks up at the fence on top of the high wall as Wolf approaches. Wolf holds out his hand. A passing inmate hands him a knife. He hides it, tucking it inside his forearm, and limps closer to Frank. Suddenly, English grabs his arm and twists it behind his back.
Where are you going, Wolfie?
I'm just going for a walk.
Let's take that walk.
English turns him around and, taking the knife from his hand, guides him towards the steps.
After 6 months in the hole, it looks like you could use some exercise.
Frank and Clarence are crawling in the roof space.
I'll meet you up on top.
They turn back. Frank suddenly looks down at the floor. He spots Litmus's mouse and picks him up.
Yeah. You're going to.
He pops him in his pocket and climbs up the pipes. Butts is in his cell, clenching his fists with frustration. Frank climbs past a grill. Light streams through it. Above him, Clarence reaches up to grab a pipe. There is a rat on it. He brushes it off. It falls on Frank, who almost loses his footing. He looks up, then continues climbing. A guard passes a dark cell. Frank is still climbing. The guard passes Clarence's cell. The fake head is on the pillow. He pauses, then checks his watch. Frank is still climbing when the guard reaches his cell. He bends to peer in through the bars close to the papier-mâché head. He straightens up and moves on to the next cell where Butts is lying on his back, on his bed, crying. The guard stops for a moment, then continues. Frank is kneeling in the roof space above Butts' cell.
Butts.
Butts ignores him, crying.
Butts, goddammit.
Frank gets up and joins Clarence. John collects the raincoat fabric, and the three of them stand under the hatch. Frank gives Clarence a leg up. He grabs the bars of the hatch and squeezes through, watched by Frank and John. The beam from the lighthouse sweeps over the flat roof above them. Clarence pushes the lid off the funnel leading from the hatch out onto the roof. It falls heavily. A watchtower guard switches on a searchlight and directs it onto the roof. John and Frank look up into the hatch. The guard switches off the searchlight. Clarence pops his head out of the funnel, then jumps out and knocks on it. In response, Frank gives John a leg up. He hauls himself up through the bars of the hatch. Frank passes up the raincoat fabric. Clarence taps on the funnel again. John pushes the material up through the funnel. Clarence grabs it and hides it behind the concrete base beneath the funnel. After the lighthouse beam has passed, he moves the fabric to one side into the shadows. Frank looks up at the hatch and grabs John's arm. John hauls him up. Frank looks down, then swings his legs up and hooks them over the bars. John pulls himself out of the funnel and hops down. He joins Clarence lying flat on the roof over the raincoat fabric. The light passes over them. Frank emerges from the funnel, climbs out and jumps down. He looks around, then creeps over to join the other two, lying down as the beam passes. Butts is trying to remove the fake grill, which is stuck. He resorts to kicking it to break it up, then crawls through the exposed hole. The guard walks down the cell block. Frank, Clarence and John grab the bundles of material and, crouching, run in a line along the length of the roof as the lighthouse beam sweeps over them. They run into the shadows and jump down to a lower level, disturbing a seagull. The watchtower guard switches on the searchlight again and trains it on the roof. The three men crouch behind a wall. The light goes off. Frank peeps over the edge of the roof where the metal lid of the funnel lies next to the concrete base. He lowers his head. Meanwhile, Butts in the ventilation shaft steps on some wiring. A guard looks up as the cell block lights flicker. Butts continues climbing. Frank and the other two, briefly lit by a red beam, jump over a large pipe which crosses the roof and crouch in the corner. They put on life jackets made from the raincoat fabric. As the beam passes, Frank climbs over a parapet. The red light moves over him. He starts to climb down a large pipe on the side of the building. The other two lean over the edge watching, but duck down when the light passes over them. Frank lands in a heap on the ground in a pool of light coming from a barred door. He gets to his feet and runs into the shadows. He looks up as John begins his descent, sliding down the pipe. Clarence leans over the parapet, watching. John jumps down onto the ground outside the door and runs past it. Clarence begins to climb down. Frank looks up anxiously. A red light briefly illuminates the pipe. John watches as Clarence nears the bottom. He falls off the bottom of the pipe, snagging his jacket. He pulls his arm free of it. It drops down. He grabs it and scrambles past the doorway to join the others.
Where's tearing this gear? What's left of it? Throw me the stuff when I get over.
Frank pulls off his jacket, hands it to the others, and starts to climb a very high chain-link fence. As he reaches the top, the two brothers are putting the bundles of fabric on their backs. Frank climbs down the other side. John climbs up next, while Clarence keeps watch. John pulls off the bundle from his back and drops it down to Frank. Clarence tosses the rest of the bundles to John, who drops them over. Frank helps John as he climbs down. Clarence scrambles up the fence. As he reaches the top, he throws the last bit of material over. Meanwhile, Butts jumps, trying in vain to reach the barred hatch in the roof space. The three escapees run down a slope in the shadows. They turn at the bottom past a palm tree and start to descend a steep hill covered in vegetation. Frank crouches, his head poking out of the undergrowth. He looks up at a guard walking across a bridge, lighting a cigarette. He ducks down into the bushes. Carrying his bundle, Frank emerges and, followed by the other two, runs down to another scrub-covered slope. They scramble down. They creep along a path next to the sea. Frank drops down over a waist-high retaining wall at the side of the path and unpacks the bundle of fabric and takes off his jacket. They start blowing up the raft, resting it on the wall. They exchange looks as they inflate the raft and the life jackets. Butts squats beneath the hatch in despair. He looks up at it and sighs, beads of sweat on his face. Frank and John put on their life jackets. They climb down over rocks and lower the raft to launch it in the inky black water, wading in with it. They push it away from the shore and lean across it, the three of them in a line, powering it forward by kicking their legs. They disappear into the darkness. Sunrise over the roof. The lid of the funnel lies next to the concrete base. A guard patrols the cells. Butt stands up against the bars of his cell. The guard pauses in front of him, then continues. He stops in front of Frank's cell, which is dark.
Get up, Morris. It's moving day. I said get up, Morris. Open up 109.
He steps in and pulls on the light.
God damn it, Morris. I said get up.
He grabs the bedclothes. The head falls on the floor.
Jesus Christ.
English watches, smiling. The head wobbles on the floor. A police helicopter flies past the prison. It lands on a sandy beach. The warden climbs out and walks over to a police officer.
Morning, Sergeant. What have you got?
Photos and a notebook of Clarence Anglin. Funny-looking bag. Must have been made from a raincoat.
It appears that they drowned.
Why?
If that was important enough to take along, they wouldn't have lost it.
Maybe they lost it to look like they drowned.
The warden glares at him and walks over to the rocks. Divers search the water nearby. He starts to climb. There are police officers and dog handlers all over the beach and cliffs. The warden suddenly spots a yellow flower on a rock. A wave nearly washes it off. He narrows his eyes, then steps down towards it. He squats to pick it up.
Warden, we just got a message from the director. He wants you on the next plane to Washington.
Do chrysanthemums grow on this island?
Not here on Angel Island. Why?
I'm curious.
The tides were mild and the fog light last night. They left at lights out. They had a 9.5-hour head start. I wonder if they made it.
They drowned.
Yes, sir.
The warden holds up the flower to his nose. He crushes it in his fist. He throws it into the sea. A wave covers it. Patrol boats pass, searching the water. Caption. A massive search was conducted for Frank Morris, John and Clarence Anglin. Law enforcement agencies were certain they would find the bodies. They never did. Alcatraz was closed less than a year later. The end.